little article.
Friday night, partly cloudy, 25 to 30. With your Central Jersey 1450 weather, this is meteorologist Tommy Yells.
In Hope Lawn, it's 48. In Bound Brook, 45. In Kenilworth, 46. In New Brunswick, 46. And it's raining. WCTC News Time, 11:06. I'm Mike Pavlichko. Next news.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm having big fun.
Well, actually, we got our first review of our new restaurant today.
Well, not a real review.
Well, it was an article. It was the first feature article.
Little article about us.
Other than mentioning it on this show and emailing our own mailing list, we've done no advertising because we opened a new restaurant about 6 weeks ago and we're trying to get it right. But it seems as though Hillary Harding from the Courier News was in. And so if you're in this area, you can pick up the
Courier News.
Courier News from Bridgewater, mm-hmm. which is a Gannett newspaper, and they talk about us. And we also had a...
It was very nice. Thanks, Hillary. If you're listening, we really appreciate
it. Super thanks, as a matter of fact. So Hillary Harding wrote about us today in the Courier News. I haven't had a chance to read it. It got thrown at me as I walked into the studio. Mark says it's great.
I read it. It was very nice. Very nice. You know, the restaurant's a tribute to my grandmother, and I think Hillary appreciated that very much.
And the Star Ledger, which is the largest circulation paper, daily paper in the state, their reviewer, Cody Kendall, who's an excellent reviewer, called to fact check. And
that's
the photographer's
correct.
Coming tonight. So Kathleen Lombardi will be reviewed in the Star Ledger.
Sometime either, in January.
Yeah, the 8th or the 16th on the Sunday. So watch for it, unless it's bad, in which case, don't
if
get
it's
the paper.
The eight, Francis, if it's the 8th is Sunday,
yeah.
then the 15th would be Sunday. It's the 7s.
You always wear the math partner.
Adding by 7. Very tough. Very tough.
You always wear the math partner. Now, I do want to... Sometimes you get an article and you stick it in your in your box, and you have to wait a couple of days till you can get a show. To talk about it, but this one we couldn't let pass. Mark and I actually called each other on the phone while reading the paper and said, "Juicy!" Turns out in the New York Times is an article by Craig Smith entitled, "Hungry Goats Atop a Tree Doing Their Bit for Gourmands." You see, it seems the Argon tree is very much endangered. But the Argon tree, which has never been artificially germinated and it can't, or planted from cuttings, is in trouble. Very interesting thing about the argon tree. The argon oil is very expensive and has been sold
since... been around for 1.6 million years. Really been around a long time. Something from the tertiary period of humanity.
Well, not the
pre-humanity.
Sale. I mean, the tree was, right? But argon oil has been around since the Phoenicians, right? Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize about argon oil... here's how it works. You see, here I'll read from the article. A black goat belted from his perch high atop a tree here. This is really cool because the goats like climb up in the tree, mm-hmm. right? For centuries, the Berbers in the stark coastal corner of northern Africa have followed these goats around as they climb the spiny evergreen argon trees to eat their leaves and leathery olive-sized fruit. They then collect the undigested pits that the goats spit up or excrete. That's right, I said excrete, and split them to extract
their... We don't need to tell everybody what excrete means, right?
...bitter kernels inside, which they then grind and press to make a nutty oil used in cooking and cosmetics. No thank you.
You know what, Francis?
What?
I swallowed a quarter once, I just kind of let it go.
Oh, my.
No, I gave up on it once.
Yeah,
okay, so that's...
So what they're trying to do, though, is they're trying to create a global market for the exotic oil. That's argon oil, which is very expensive. You get about
they make very, very little of it.
It takes a lot of labor, and you get about a quart per tree per season. And it's an unlikely alliance that hopes to raise awareness about the inherent value of the trees, encouraging more careful grazing and stopping the local population from chopping them for firewood.
Francis.
I won't chop it for firewood, but you can't make me eat the argon oil.
I need to read a few more blurbs from this article.
Go ahead.
A few three-star chefs and an army of grand dames excited by the oil's reputed anti-aging quality.
Francis?
Yeah.
I prefer to age.
It also, here, hold on a second. The edible oil, extracted from roasted kernels is used in a Berber condiment called amlu, eaten for breakfast with bread, and recommended with a wink and a nod, and it improves virility.
And Francis, once again, impotency doesn't sound so bad.
I don't need virility. I think it just means if you're going to eat that, that means you're somebody with big...
No, I'm not done. I'm not done here.
Go ahead.
The only problem with was the caprine intervention. How could they encourage food lovers to drizzle the amber oil over their Chilean sea bass if it had passed, however indirectly, through the goat of a through the gut of a goat?
Yeah, not me.
The gut's not really what I'm worried about.
Yeah, if you ate it and then killed the goat and cut it out there, I might eat it. All right, we're done. I have to say, a former...
I have more stuff here. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's even more. They talk about when they're making it.
Yeah.
And what's being exported is not going through the goats. It's actually just coming directly
from the
tree. And being made into oil. So any of this oil that you would get for yourself, you wouldn't actually have gone through a goat, happily.
Because in America, we don't allow that.
But the locals are very excited about the fact that they make this stuff and that theirs is actually better. And the best quote in the whole article?
Yeah.
You can smell it a mile away when they're making it. And that was one of the things they were very proud of.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm so proud of that. I don't know that I'm so proud of that.
I'm sorry. So please, get your AMLU oil. Very expensive. 5,250 milliliter bottles made a year.
Well, there's other big news in yesterday's New York Times.
What could be bigger than that?
Here's the thing. Our friend Rocco DiSpiritu is no longer on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny. We haven't spoken to Rocco since we started this show, but he's a friend of ours, and he's mm-hmm. a really nice guy, and he's cooked some of the best meals we've ever had.
He is, and I've said this before on the air, I would say one of the top five or six chefs in New York City, in my opinion, as far as the meals that I've had prepared by him.
Well, and he had a radio show that went head-to-head with ours. Of course, mm-hmm. he was huge and we're tiny. Except
there's those things.
Except on the internet, where he mm-hmm. didn't have a site. But his show was great, but I never got to listen to it.
But
I was
Rocco's one of those guys, and I really, really hope that he returns to the kitchen. And the reason I hope is selfish, because Rocco's food is so spectacular.
Yeah.
It's so singular and so good, and he's so talented. And everybody I know who's ever worked with him calls him such a great teacher and such a great person to work with
uh-huh.
that I think that New York City's had a great loss when since Rocco hasn't been in a kitchen.
Well, Rocco had that reality TV show, The mm-hmm. Restaurant. He was the chef on that reality TV show, and I think that those things are really bad. You know, it's like... Somebody asked you to do a reality TV show. Look, your girlfriend asked you to go on Springer because she got to tell you a secret. Say no. send me a letter. You know what I mean?
Well, this is something we've talked about on the show before. I think that Rocco was, and I don't want to say set up, but yeah, I do. Set up. Set up to be made to look bad and on that show. And
what's
and
more interesting to television to watch? Hey, Rocco DiSpiritu opens a restaurant and it's running great. Yawn. I mean, you know, yep. terrific. That's great, but is that exciting TV? But yeah, Rocco DiSpiritu hired a bunch of freaks and
right.
disaster
it was all
areas.
About the drama. It was all and hiring was a casting call instead of hiring waiters and waitresses.
Okay, there's a show on tonight about a restaurant that's running really well by a really nice chef. Yawn. There's a show on HBO tonight mm-hmm. about a train wreck of a restaurant where the chef is flirting with girls at the bar while there's a fire in the kitchen and their restaurant critic is on table 12. So that's what they designed the show to look like. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Rocco DiSpiritu, he's off the air, but he's a great chef, and we look forward to seeing
his
service
food again.
In a kitchen somewhere. Our guest mm-hmm. coming up is Anthony Giglio. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's author of several books, and he's going to come talk to us about restaurants and cocktails overall in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shada, stage left, and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio has written the books of Cocktails in New York. He's also edited and updated the Mr. Boston Guide to Cocktails. He's also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He was a New Jersey New Jersey Monthly Magazine reviewer for 10 years, and he's now with New Jersey Life, and he joins us today to talk about cocktails and restaurants in New Jersey.
And he's now a regular on the Restaurant Guys radio show. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Great, how are you?
You're one of our favorite food writers.
Come on.
No, really, I swear. Listen, I want to get your opinion on something. This is totally unscripted, of course.
You can tell by the fact that you have no idea what we're going to get ask your opinion on.
I read what do you think about the 2006 elections? No. I read an article. There was a Florence Fabricant article on Wednesday, the 28th of December. Gold 2005 is a well-balanced blend of Chardonnay, Viognier, Gewurztraminer, and Flex of 24-karat gold. Invert the bottle gently once or twice before pouring, and you'll get a little bit of Flex of gold in each glass. The wine is made from Australian grapes in California and tastes of juicy Meyer lemons, blah, 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 blah. It's available for $25.99 a bottle. What's your gut reaction to that?
I tasted it.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Why do they put gold in it, Anthony?
Because Florence Fabricant would write on it.
Well, there, I guess it worked.
There you go.
It worked.
Is it worth $26 a bottle?
That's a tough question.
Yeah, would a $10 bottle of Alsatian Riesling make me just as happy? Probably.
Nicely okay. put.
There you
very
go.
Diplomatic.
Very diplomatic. Are those people sending you to, like, Europe or something?
He's the new international spokesman for Gold Fleck Company.
Anthony doesn't like to rule out any potential sponsors.
Okay. Let's talk again about, further in Unscripted, Mark and I sort of really had a bit of a hoot last night. We were sitting around the office, and we were talking about the article that appeared a while back, and there have been a couple of articles on $1,000 cocktails. Are you familiar with any of these?
I read the piece in the Times a few weeks ago with great amusement.
There's been a couple of these articles written around, and it seems like everybody's trying to one up everybody else.
$1,000 cocktail. What's your spin on that? On the $500 cocktails, $1,000 cocktails, $2,200 cocktails.
It's utter nonsense.
Really, is that what you think? No,
utter nonsense.
Oh, we don't put a brand out there, and you can call it utter nonsense. Absolutely.
I think it's utter nonsense, but I would love the addresses of the people that are buying these things.
Okay, and just
Mark, to go back to the gold real quick, then $26 is a frivolous, you know, weekend wine price. I mean, if you told me it was $260 a bottle, I would say it's utter crap.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But $26, you know what, for a lot of people I know are not as cheap as I am. So I don't think $26 is going to kill anybody.
You're right. For $26, it's a hoot. You try it, you have the wine, you shake up the gold, you make everybody feel special.
I got it.
And it's not even that it's bad. It's actually good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just debatable whether it needs the gold to be good.
I got it.
I don't think that's debatable, Anthony. I think we all know whether or not it needs the gold to be good.
I got to share with you something. Now, Anthony is a friend of ours. We've known each other for a long time, and Anthony doesn't review our restaurants because he did in the past, and then we became friends in a fact-checking phone call, and we found out we lived a couple of blocks from each other. One of the things that is interesting is I have had the great good fortune to be invited reviewing other restaurants in New York. I was thinking of one in particular that you invited me to go on a review with you for the Sun. And Anthony is one of the most generous people I know, and we have this total, like, you know, you pick up dinner, I pick up dinner, it doesn't matter. But we were reviewing, and we were on the budget, and the waitress came and said, "Do you want bottled water?" And I said, "Yeah, we'll have a bottle of sparkling water." I never saw a dirtier look given to me by Anthony Chilio. I said, "Should I not have done that?" He's like, "I'm onto you, respiratory bottle water scam. We're on a budget here."
Yeah, exactly.
We can spend it on wine, but don't spend it on water.
So this one article in the Times that we've all been talking about as far as the four-figure cocktails go is the Reserve Ruby Red. Okay, served at a place in Chicago that we don't need to name. Served in a traditional martini glass, the cocktail is made with super premium Grey Goose L'Orange vodka, hypnotique liqueur, orange and pomegranate juices, topped with Dom Perignon, the coup de grace, a one carat ruby affixed to the stir, and the bar tab for a ruby red, an eye-popping $950. You know what I say? Bartender, make me a drink.
Keep
jeweler, get me a ruby.
Right, keep the ruby.
Yeah, exactly.
and
let's face it, a carat ruby for under 900 is a piece of crap anyway.
I got to tell you,
you know what I like about you? Cheap, but still just a little bit over the top at the same time.
My favorite is the article goes on. It interviewed this guy who ordered it with his hot girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And they asked afterwards, was she impressed? And he says, Mr. Santiago, the customer, says, It was the best $950 I ever spent.
Yeah, I read that.
Hey, man. You know, whatever it takes, man. Sometimes $950 is quite a bargain. All right, enough of that. Now, recently, Anthony, you have coming out in the next issue of New Jersey Life an article on called Bring in the Heat. You don't need a fireplace to get toasty this winter. A tumbler or snifter of these wines and spirits is sure to make your temperature rise. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
We're talking about drinks in the winter that keep you warm.
Uh-huh. You know that's a myth, right?
Yeah, of course. But right. it's one of those evergreen pieces.
Is this a dump?
They call them evergreens. They need to be put out there.
Right.
People like them.
Is this a bring the heat? Does that like a double entendre for something else?
Of course, because that's
are
what
you,
does.
The guy with the $950 was trying to bring in the heat with a ruby red, and I think he got it.
Right, and my heat is a lot less expensive.
Well, I'll tell you, the article is really interesting. The magazine is New Jersey Life, and it's the February-March issue, which is coming out shortly. We have a little sneak preview, being the restaurant guys in the know and all. But you talk about drinks that make you warm, but you also talk about hot cocktails. Now, you just came off editing and re-releasing the Mr. Boston Guide, which for years was a relic and useless, and now is, I think, the best guide for behind the bar that any bar can have. What's
thank you.
You're welcome. So what's the state of hot drinks in America? Are people really making, like, hot buttered rums and Tom and Jerry's and things like that?
You'd be surprised. I didn't think so. And I actually, you know, picked up the phone and called about 20 different bartenders across the country when I was working on the Mr. Boston Guide, just to see what was still alive, what was dead. The hot toddy, of course, it just sounds too old-fashioned for most people. But you'll see, like I wrote in the New Jersey Life piece, people are putting riffs on them, and people really do come in. Especially like it's a happy hour thing. People walk a few blocks after work, or they walk, especially mm-hmm. like in Hoboken, let's say, where a lot of commuters coming through. They get off, they're walking 10 blocks or so. They want something to warm them up. They come in. They use them as restoratives.
Yep. Let's talk more about hot toddies when we come back.
You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shada, stage left in Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is our friend Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio has written the book Cocktails in New York. He's also just been the person to update the Mr. Boston Guide to Cocktails, which is a really great... The new edition of the Mr. Boston Guide is really great. You should pick it up if you're interested in cocktails.
Beware the old editions that may be on...
The pre-Giglio editions.
On shelves in bookstores.
Of the Mr. Boston Guide. He's also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine and writes for New Jersey Life and was the restaurant critic for a long time for New Jersey Monthly Magazine. And we're talking about hot cocktails. You know, Anthony, one of my favorite things to do in the wintertime, and except for a couple of mutual friends that you and I have, and me and Mark, the Tom and Jerry mm-hmm. does not have the attention it deserves. I mean, will you talk to people about that drink?
Well, the biggest problem with Tom and Jerry is that it involves making a batter beforehand with raw eggs.
Right.
And this just freaks people out. People hear raw eggs and they run from a drink, thinking of salmonella. Of course, is that what you're referring to? Like, you know, controversy wise.
No, it's just that it's fallen out of disuse. You know, I think now here's how you make a Tom and Jerry, and it was a historical cocktail. Well, it came from Jerry Thomas. Purportedly, it came from Jerry Thomas, who was one of the.
Yeah, that's one of those cocktails though that has three or four different histories behind
say,
it.
Like it's one of those ones that everyone claims, but
right.
From what I understand, Jerry Thomas at least had a hand in it.
You know that I invented the Cosmopolitan, Anthony.
I know, I heard that.
I invented the gin and tonic. however, this is a cocktail that was at one time so popular in the United States that people had, there's a special bowl, like a Tom and Jerry bowl and Tom and Jerry mug that people would have.
Yep.
And it's fallen out of favor, but the way you make a Tom and Jerry is you make a batter beforehand, and it keeps forever. I mean, you make it with raw eggs, but you know, you make cakes with raw eggs, too.
Right.
If you put enough alcohol in there and you're careful enough, the batter is very stable. And then you basically put a couple of gloops of this batter in the bottom of a glass and pour hot water or hot milk over it. And it's awesome. It's like an eggnog, but it's
with rum and brandy.
Right, a little rum, a little brandy, exactly.
Sugar. Shave a little nutmeg on the top, and I'll tell you, we're gonna starting tonight. If you want to try one of these, we'll have it behind the bar at Catherine Lombardi. We'll have Tom and Jerry's.
Something I love to put in my Tom and Jerry's too is vanilla. I love a little vanilla flavor in my Tom and Jerry's.
But don't you find that
the recipe in Mr. Boston actually calls for cream of tartar as well
stabilize it,
just to keep it savory there too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it also stabilizes the batter. We use cream of tartar in it, but the thing about the hot drink I find is it's sort of hard to, they fill you up, you know, like if you have a Tom and Jerry, you're not having like seven of them.
It's an hors d'oeuvre.
It's like it's kind of like drinking a White Russian, you know. I mean, what do you think about that, Anthony?
And I was gonna say it's actually a dessert. I mean, it has all the great, you know, it has cinnamon, cloves, sugar, allspice, eggs. I mean, it could be a meringue, you know what I mean? Like a lemon meringue pie, basically liquefied.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Anthony Giglio about the upcoming restaurant reviews in New Jersey for the February and March issue of New Jersey Life magazine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast through iTunes.
Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. He's one of our favorite food writers. He's the author of Cocktails in New York. He's also the editor of the new Mr. Boston Guide, which has gone through an absolute transformation. It's now a great book to have. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He was the restaurant reviewer for New Jersey Monthly for 10 years, and he currently reviews for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life Magazine. Hey, Anthony. Welcome back.
Hey, guys.
You have an article coming up in the next issue of New Jersey Life, which is a pretty darned interesting article and a concept. I've never seen anything like this before. It's called The Ultimate Dinner Party. Why don't you tell us about that?
We were focusing on a total food issue, and we wanted to have all these, you know, really outrageous food stories in there, and we thought one really fun idea would be, wicked fun, we should say. We were howling when I posed it to my editor. My original title was Bonfire of the Vanities. And it was to put, you know, let's say a handful of the state's best chefs in one kitchen and make them work together to coordinate a full dinner and then make them sit down and eat the dinner that they all cook together.
So you're going to put six of the best chefs in the state and their egos in one room, a very large room.
Right, Bonfire of the Vanities.
Right.
And my editor, you know, went off, you know, over the top. He just thought it was hilarious and thought it was great. And, you know, we've made a wish list of, we would say, let's try for six and hope that five answer, because they'll never do it. We thought maybe three would say yes. All six said yes, so we kept all six, and we thought it was a brilliant idea to put these people together and see what would happen. And it was as crazy as we had hoped.
Well, so let's talk about the six people that you put together.
Okay, well, we have Craig Shelton, who everyone knows is the chef at the Ryland Inn for many, many years. David Drake, who left the Stage House to open his own place in Rahway, David Drake's. Nicholas Harari, owner of Restaurant Nicholas. The very well-known Dennis Foy, who owns two restaurants, Dennis Foy's in Point Pleasant and Bay Point Prime. And, of course, the rising star of the group, Anthony Bucco, of...
Stage Left.
Yeah.
And Catherine Lombardi.
And we left out James Laird of Serenade.
Right. And James Laird of Serenade. Serenade. Thank you.
Well, so you put these men together. They then cook lunch, and then you sit down and have lunch with
it's
six
dinner.
Courses.
It's actually for dinner.
For dinner with with six of the best chefs in New Jersey, each preparing a course. And then, was the food awesome?
Food was incredible.
Now,
yeah,
did they each make their own dish, or did they cook together?
So we decided that we would pick the names out of a hat, and each one got to, you know, and we just said, let's make a 6-course meal, and we'll, you know, and of course, there's always, you know, you could say, oh, dessert's probably the easiest, or maybe the amuse-bouche is the easiest, or maybe the appetizer is the easiest, or the hors d'oeuvres, or whatever. So we said, let's just pick it out of the hat. This way, whoever gets what, and they'll, you know, have to be a good sport about it. But of course, they were able to do whatever they wanted. There was no budget. And they could have gone as crazy
yes,
as they wanted.
Yes,
they had to make something the size of a potato chip.
Anthony, there was a budget.
It was imposed by how much they brought to the table. So you have six chefs there, and then they all cook dinner, and then they all sit down and eat. What was more interesting, the food or the conversation?
The conversation.
So what was it like? Why don't you give us a little preview of the article coming up so people can know that they need to run out. And by the way, I'm looking at the preview of the article, and the pictures look amazing. Mm-hmm. You have six of the what I think really are the top six chefs in New Jersey all working together in Nicholas's kitchen, turning out six courses of incredible food. And you've included the recipes.
The food really does look unbelievable.
It was pretty magnificent. And We had them all, you know, prepare a dummy course first, so we could do the beautiful photography while we still had daylight.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, everyone really had to rock out their courses one by one. They had everyone brought a sous chef, and then all the chefs put on their whites and went upstairs and got to unwind at the table. We set an eight top. We set up so that two chefs each sitting at each end of the table, and it was myself and one of my editors with me at the head, or one, you know, it was a four-sided table, so not really a head, but, and then we put a tape recorder on the table, and one, tape is on, anything goes. Anything you say goes.
So you not only had the top six chefs in the state, you also had their sous chefs.
Yes, but the sous chefs stayed downstairs and executed the meals.
Yeah, but if a bomb had hit that building, there'd been a culinary decapitation strategy for the state. I mean,
exactly.
If there had been a fire, I mean, and everyone had died, there would be like one of the best food writers and all of the top chefs of New Jersey would no longer exist.
You guys might have gotten hit the hardest because you supplied the wine directors and the sommelier too.
Oh yeah, it's funny. Anthony calls us up and says, "We need some service staff." So I sent our sommelier and our maitre d'.
Yeah, we were almost closed that night, Anthony.
Dinner, by the way, and you as the reporter ate dinner. That dinner?
Yeah.
$15,000 minimum.
It was over the top.
There's a picture here of the six top chefs in New Jersey sitting at a table eating together, all in their chef's whites. And if you're a foodie, That's an amazing picture. You should sell that picture and get it framed. It's incredible.
It really was a magical night, and it went way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, like, the, you know, and talk about different egos. I mean, or lack thereof. I mean, I don't know. I kind of knew what to expect from some of the more famous / notorious chefs at the table, but like Anthony, for instance, Anthony Bucco, at restaurant and at Stage Left, and Catherine Lombardi. I don't know him very well. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how's he gonna handle this crowd? He was amazing. He was very funny. James Laird, who's a known entity, was as quiet as I suspected he'd be. I mean, he's very wry. I mean, that's his mm-hmm. his humor is kind of off the cuff. He says a quip so fast that, you know, everyone else is talking, you might miss it.
Uh-huh.
Luckily, I sat next to him, so I was catching all these really great jabs he was throwing out there.
And clearly taking notes, judging by the article.
Yeah. Well, like to transcribe the tape, which wasn't in the budget, because there are tape services who do this, I sat down for about 10 hours with a headphone, and it was just maddening trying to keep track of whose voices. Everyone was yelling over each other, laughing, screaming. There was debates. There was cursing. It was high opera.
People may not realize that. I think what would be so interesting about this, and you know, this wasn't for owners. This was for chefs and you guys. And I think it was a very interesting dynamic you set up, because people, you know, they say that our profession, the food and wine area of life in careers in the United States, are getting more and more professional. Great chefs almost always have strong opinions mm-hmm. and are big personality people. And when people are cooking on the top of their game, like these six guys, and are really at the top of the field in a state like New Jersey, which has more fine dining restaurants per capita than any other state in the union, you're talking about some intelligent guys.
Yep.
And women, not in this six, but
and intelligent guys who are used to giving all the orders and having them obeyed directly, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was telling Francis off the record that and I can't mention names, but
I guess it's on the record now. Go ahead, go for it.
Well, no, I'm not going to mention names. One of the chefs who is extremely intelligent and extremely precise, had his sous chef pirouetting around the kitchen. It was just insane, and it was all with the calmest tone. It was just like, chop, chop, and here's, do this, do that, do this, do that, and I'll be back in 3 seconds to make sure it's all done. And you're like, here are seven orders, and I'll be back in 5 minutes. And it got done, and yeah, nobody was sweating. It was that's nice to say. Like, I had my stints in restaurants, you know, back in my college days. None of them respectable restaurants, except for my bartending gig when I worked at Amanda's in Hoboken a long time ago. Mm. But even there, I mean, I was there at a startup, which is chaos.
Right.
Versus these places that are, you know, these are purring engines that have been warmed up for many years, most of the restaurants. Watching these guys with absolutely no stress whatsoever. I mean, there was more stress in how they were treating each other, or how I was more stressed out watching them, hoping nobody blew up, or threw a knife across the room. But it was the ultimate calm, really, really calm.
Well, it's amazing that there's been a book written, I forget the author now, who's a guest on the show, I'll think of it over the break, he's written a book from the perspective of a great chef, and he's also written a book from the perspective of a heart surgeon, a pediatric heart
Michael
surgeon.
Michael Rollman.
Michael Rollman, yeah. And he says the parallels in writing those two books was absolutely incredible about the level of focus and level of, you know, the type of person who does that sort of thing. Our guest is Anthony Giglio. He's written some amazing pieces for New Jersey Life magazine, and he also reviews restaurants for New Jersey Life magazine. We'll be talking with him about the reviews in next month's issues in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lavardi Restaurants in New Brunswick. Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. He is the author of several books. He's the wine columnist for Boston Magazine, and he was the restaurant reviewer for New Jersey Monthly for 10 years. And he's currently reviewing and writing feature articles for New Jersey Life and the New York Sun. We were just talking about an amazing article. It's in the upcoming issue of New Jersey Life magazine called The Ultimate Dinner Party, where Anthony had six of the best chefs in the state, or the six best chefs in the state, in my opinion, come and cook dinner for him. How egomaniacal, Anthony. That's a great gig. I like that.
Sounds like a pretty good deal. All you had to do was write about it.
And next, he's writing about the nine masseurs who will come to his house. But you also have some restaurant reviews coming up. What do we have in store? You reviewed a place in Atlantic City.
Red Square at the quarter of the Tropicana, which is one of the most dramatic restaurants I've been to in quite a long time. I kind of went in with a bad attitude, thinking, oh God, it's more Atlantic City schmaltz.
Uh-huh.
And I was just taken back by how beautiful it was.
It sounds a little bizarre, man.
It is bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. It's exotic. And you know what? It fits Atlantic City without being over the top, because the quarter itself at the Tropicana, and they kind of cut out a great intro I had here, because they always cut out the really good stuff I write.
What was the intro that's missing?
That you walk through three blocks worth of casino, because it literally is. The Tropicana stretches back from the boardwalk, like back to, you know, Atlantic Avenue, like it goes back three full blocks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you don't realize it as you're crossing bridges over streets, and you're going through casino after, you know, through clouds of smoke.
Uh-huh.
And then you get to an escalator that says the quarter, and as you go up, there's a Trump Loy sky painted overhead. And it actually looks like you're leaving. you're going towards heaven out of this hell you're in. and then you get to the top, and you're in this piazza. It's like Caesar's Palace in Vegas.
Hold on a second. Now, is the Trump Loy really realistic? I mean, do you think it's the sky, or do you think what
a
great painting?
When I tell you what a fool I felt like, because I said to my wife, oh, I didn't realize it was a roof deck.
Oh, that's funny. So I guess it's realistic.
She said, are you an idiot? She waited until we got to the top. I was like, oh. It was that, because we were out of the boardwalk in the sunlight, and then we go through the dim casinos, and all of a sudden there's this beautiful bright blue sky overhead. And just, but I guess that millisecond where the vantage from the escalator is just the blue, and you don't really see any lighting or anything,
uh-huh.
It looked absolutely real to me. And then you get to the top, of course, but you're in this piazza with, like, you know, there's seven different themes all around the piazza, including Red Square, which looks like, you know, a mini Red Square, which is pretty funny.
And so what's the restaurant like?
It is very, very dim. It's chilly. And what's funny is that the dichotomy there is that, you know, everything is supposed to be chilly. I mean, the bar is made of solid ice. columns are encrusted in faux ice that look like dry ice, that they're, you know, there's almost that smoke wafting off them. And then the whole place is done in this deep, 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 you know, Soviet red, including like a 40-foot wall of curtains across the back, these drapes that would have made Scarlett O'Hara weak in the knees.
So did Arnold Schwarzenegger come out dressed as a Batman character? Is that what happened next?
It was really crazy. I mean.
It was actually... Now, you said I read in the review, it's a bar of ice. It's solid. The bar is made of ice to the floor?
Picture a slab of ice, like the Berlin Wall of ice, right? About, you know, 40 feet long, about, at least. And then they start standing on edge. And then they build the bar around it and even with it at the top. And at the top, they drill holes in it, and they sink bottles of vodka into it, you know, like three quarters, so you could see the tops of them.
Uh-huh.
And that's just where they use the display vodka that they're pouring at that point or whatever they're serving. The rest of them go back into the cooler where they're in sub-zero. And if you want to go to the cooler, you could borrow, I swear, you could borrow a sable or a Soviet coat.
I like it.
Like an army coat?
Yeah, an army coat. And you could take pictures in the meat locker. Where
I look really good in sable, man.
As I said, you know, for the hilarity of it, to ask, can I go see the seller? They'll let you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you've described what's there. Is the food any good?
The food was amazingly good.
Really?
I was so like, I'm like, I see like, you know, clams Khrushchev, and I'm like, oh, come on.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, chicken Kiev, which was probably the best chicken Kiev I've ever had.
Really?
And I've had it half a dozen times.
And there's not a lot of good food in Atlantic City in the hotel casinos.
No. I can't say how many stars I gave it, but it was the lead review.
Really?
And I loved it. I really, really liked it a lot. And I'll tell you, the funny part is that they do try and do, like, I said, like, you know, the menu is peppered with tongue-in-cheek communisms. And, you know, it's like the clams Khrushchev, and there's caviar all over the place, or actually more politically correctly, they're using American sturgeon, which is really nice to see.
Uh-huh.
And,
right.
And yet you look at these dishes and say, like, these are definitely dishes that either only the big fur-headed, you know, bigwigs could have afforded at the time,
right,
or gotten their hands on, or it's totally post-perestroika, because these are really high-end dishes with really, really expensive ingredients on them.
That's a really, really, really sounds like a cool place. There's another place that you mentioned, and I want to give it a quick mention too, because it's owned by some friends of mine and Francis's, Joe and Sandy Clyde, that you're reviewing this month. A place called the Surgeonsville Inn.
Yeah, the Skunksville Inn.
Yeah,
the Skunktown Inn. That was such great trivia to stumble on, because, you know, I'm always trying to come up with to write these reviews.
You need to tell everybody about what trivia you're speaking of.
I will. It's always hard to come up with an intro like that's interesting and engaging, and, you know, and like I said, a lot of the ones that I think are interesting and engaging get cut because they're too controversial. This one they kept. I found out that the U.S. Postal Service actually renamed what is now Sergeantsville, a town 200 years ago that was called Skunk Town.
That's
I cannot make that up. Skunk Town.
Not a cool name.
And the USPS set up a post office there and said, if we're gonna set up a post office here, we need to use the name. Let's use the name of the most prominent family in town, the Sergeants.
Because we're not sending mail to Skunksville.
Right, so they got rid of Skunk. So I joked and said, you know, if it weren't for the good taste, which is, you know, hilarious in itself, the good taste of the USPS, Sandy and Joe Clyde would actually be owners of the Skunk Town Inn.
You know what? I bet Sandy and Joe Clyde would have opened the restaurant somewhere else. Anyway, so that's another good restaurant. You should try that in Sergeantsville. The Sergeantsville Inn, they're really good people. They used to have a place in New Brunswick, and they have since moved out to Sergeantsville. That's pretty cool. We're going to talk more about restaurants in Jersey with the New Jersey Life restaurant critic Anthony Giglio in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today we're talking with Anthony Giglio, who's a restaurant reviewer for New Jersey Life magazine, as well as a bunch of other things. Anthony, this month we were talking, you're writing about romantic restaurants. What do you think it is that makes one restaurant romantic and another restaurant not romantic?
well, like all things in life, it's subjective, of course. I think there are some universal aspects, like, you know, beautiful lighting, which most, you know, a lot of restaurants don't get.
Mm-hmm.
A fireplace never hurts if you could have one. I think ambient music that's just audible rather than, you know, part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, you know, there are ways that restaurants could be constructed where there are nooks and crannies and little places that you feel like you have a little privacy Red Square, for instance, has these amazing banquettes that are like 6 feet high, and you sit down to them, and you are alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have those. We have those in the new Catherine Lombardi restaurant, and Mark's playing up his Italian American heritage. And they're these wraparound banquettes. There's six people, and they're really high, and they go around a table. And I'm spreading the rumor. I don't know if you know this, Mark. I'm telling everyone as I seat them there that those are bulletproof.
I hope that no one is unpleasantly surprised.
I wonder if anyone gets killed if they can sue me. Mark actually affectionately refers to those, and we can always make fun of our own ethnic groups. Mark is referring to those as the Goomba booths in the corner.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to talk about something that's a little more private than other times, you know?
Well, anyway, so I agree, and I tell you, but I always focus on lighting. I think that restaurants who miss lighting, music, temperature, ambiance, I mean, you go into a restaurant sometimes and it's 75 degrees or it's 68 degrees or whatever. Those things are supremely important, and most guests don't realize what's wrong exactly, but at the end of the night,
they're uncomfortable.
You had a better time or a worse time.
Right.
Would you agree with that those are subliminal, Anthony?
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, subliminal to neurotics like us. We go in and I'm pissed off the minute I walk in the door if I could perform surgery in the entry. Like, it's like, all right, already I hate it. And again, different age groups have different tolerances. I know that older people prefer more light and they can't read the menu. There's always that, can you bring me a flashlight? You know, the sarcastic, can I have a candle to read the menu, please?
For romantic restaurants, though, for me, they have to be fairly dim because I really look a lot better when it's dim.
You look better backlit.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, though. You walk into a restaurant, it's too bright. That really gets my goat. Unless it's like a lunch place or something. You walk in and they always want to say, you know, you can play night baseball in here. What's going on?
Right.
Our guest today was Anthony Giglio. Anthony, thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks again, Anthony.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
You should go pick up New Jersey Life magazine. You can go to newjerseylife.com. We'll link you to it on our website later on. Some great stuff in there. Some amazing, amazing articles. Some stuff that's never been done before in New Jersey. I'm Francis Schott.
I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.